You're listening to a Drishti Point podcast. I'm Farah Nasrallah, and I'm here with Nicole Marcia. She is the founder of Fine Balance Yoga, and she's here to talk with us about trauma-sensitive yoga. She leads trauma-sensitive yoga trainings for teachers as well as public classes, and I'm really excited and honored to have you here, Nicole.
Well, it's great to be here, and thank you. It's a real honor for me.
So first, let's try to understand, what is trauma-sensitive yoga? Mm-hmm.
Well, trauma-sensitive yoga is yoga that really focuses on the needs of individuals who have experienced traumatic events in their lives, and are looking to yoga as a form of self-regulation. So trauma-sensitive classes focus on being safely embodied. They focus on mindfulness with a emphasis on ahimsa or non-harming. And they also focus on using the body as a resource for self-regulation.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to come back to self-regulation, using the body as a source of self-regulation. Well, let's go there now. Is that being aware of emotions and sensations as they arise, and accessing places that allow us to manage those in a way that's not harmful for ourselves and others?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it certainly can refer to accessing emotions and sensations as they arise. That's a big part of it. More so, what it relates to is this idea that trauma is an experience that lives in the body, specifically in the nervous system. So often with trauma survivors, what we're seeing are people with dysregulated nervous systems. So that can often be an overactivation of the sympathetic nervous system. So we see things like hyperarousal or a low threshold startle response. There can be things like flashbacks, intrusive thoughts. And again, these don't just happen sort of psychologically and emotionally, mm-hmm. these trauma experiences or trauma memories, they actually happen in the body. Mm-hmm. So what we're often going to see with folks who have experienced significant trauma in their lives is that they're looking outside for tools for self-regulation. That could include using food, using drugs and alcohol, engaging in self-harming behaviors, engaging in other kinds of addictive behaviors like gambling or sexual addiction. So any kind of tool that's going to impact the nervous system, mm-hmm. and bring that person back to a sense of midline or baseline or a feeling of safety. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about using yoga for self-regulation, what we're talking about is primarily using the breath. Mm-hmm. So we can teach students in trauma-sensitive classes how to use the breath as a tool for self-regulation, to impact either the parasympathetic nervous system or the sympathetic nervous system, mm-hmm. or, you know, right in between, depending on, you know, what the student feels is right for them. And hopefully have them gain some tools for self-regulation. Also the kinds of asana that we teach, the types of asana, you know, whether the asana is langana or brahmana. The temperature in the room, all of these will impact the nervous system.
And what do those terms mean? The two different types of asanas?
When we're looking at langana poses, we're looking at poses that are more sedating, more relaxing, cooling. Mm-hmm. They're going to activate the parasympathetic nervous system. Mm-hmm. When we're looking at brahmana practices, we're looking at practices that are going to be more heating, more energizing, and they'll activate the sympathetic nervous system. So for instance, back bends are considered to be more brahmana, mm-hmm. and forward folds are considered to be more langana. So depending on a student's needs, whether we're seeing, an overactivation of the parasympathetic nervous system or the sympathetic nervous system, which is the more common, we can use poses to impact their nervous system.
So I imagine this whole rise of trauma-sensitive yoga came out of a need that wasn't fulfilled, that somehow regular yoga classes were not able to fulfill the needs of people who have experienced trauma, or that there's something different about the way trauma-sensitive yoga is taught than what we know in a regular yoga class. So what are those differences that that you can highlight?
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to be really clear that I didn't create this trauma-sensitive protocol. It was created by Dave Emerson at the Trauma Center at the Justice Resource Institute in Brookline, Massachusetts, alongside Bessel van der Kolk and the other folks that work there. So there are a lot of things that make a trauma-sensitive yoga class different than perhaps what you might find in a regular studio class. You know, classes are kept both religiously and spiritually neutral. There's less use of Sanskrit. Teachers don't touch students. Teachers always let students know where they are in the room. Teachers are trained to recognize and safely manage things like triggers, flashbacks, dissociation, those kinds of things that can often happen in a yoga class. Trauma-sensitive yoga teachers are also trained to really be conscientious in how they use language. So really, they move from a place of demand in their teaching to a place of invitation and inquiry in their teaching. So they invite students to inquire into what their experience is in a pose. Time is really paid attention to in trauma-sensitive yoga classes, because there can be a lot of time distortion for people who are experiencing a particular PTSD. So, you know, teachers will often count down so that students know how long they're going to be in a pose. You know, even very small things like, you know, how to regulate lighting in a room, what kind of music is appropriate. All of these little details that could potentially trigger a student are really paid attention to. And we know that we can't eliminate triggers for our students, but we can lessen them, and we can learn how to really safely and compassionately manage a student who feels triggered.
So I'd like to come back to whole self-regulation through breath. So is it just through cueing the breath and the process of inviting inquiry into what's happening that allows people to develop that mechanism of regulation?
Well, certainly mindfulness of the breath is very important, because again, it's part of mindfulness, it's part of being in the present moment. And you know, I think for everybody, not just trauma survivors, of course we're all trauma survivors, but for everyone, you know, that process of coming back to the present, coming back to the present, coming back to the breath is very important. What I'm talking about a little bit more, though, are actually specific pranayama, so specific techniques. For instance, simply breathing in and out through the nose activates the parasympathetic nervous system. An emphasis on the exhalation, perhaps with a short kumbhaka at the end of that exhalation, activates the parasympathetic nervous system. So again, we're talking about giving students very specific pranayama that they can use when they're sitting on a bus, when they're going into a tough meeting, when they suddenly find themselves walking down the street and they're triggered. You know,
I see.
Rather than have a cigarette or go in and have a drink, stop. Pause, get grounded, manage your breath, which manages your brainstem, which is the core of self-regulation.
I see. So it's really making that connection to how we can use our breath to elicit a response in the body that brings us to a place where we're not looking outside for regulation.
Exactly. Yeah.
And tell me about your personal experience with teaching. You know, I mean, yoga's, I feel such a fulfilling, it's such a fulfilling and satisfying experience when we practice ourselves and when we're able to share that practice with others. But what's it been like for you in terms of how has teaching and learning this particular type of yoga changed and deepened your understanding of the practice and the way that you practice?
Well, you know, I came to the practice of yoga after experiencing a pretty violent sexual assault. And in the aftermath of that sexual assault, became very heavily involved with drugs and alcohol. I was a very heavy smoker. I was quite overweight. I used food to numb, you know, psychological and emotional experiences that were too hard to be with. And I got into yoga sort of by accident, like a lot of people, I think, looking for a form of exercise. What I found that was really interesting was that after a couple of years of practice, a lot of those coping mechanisms that I had in place, the alcohol, the smoking, the drugs, those things started to fall away. And it wasn't very conscious, but what I was clear about was that the yoga was actually taking the place of those tools that I was using. Now, again, at that time, I didn't see them as tools, but I can see in retrospect that that's what they were. So, fast forward to 2009, I was working as a yoga therapist at the Burnaby Center for Mental Health and Addictions, which is a 100-bed treatment facility for folks with concurrent disorders. So that means that they have both mental health conditions and addictions concurrently. And my boss called me into her office and said, "Have you ever heard of trauma-informed yoga?" Which I hadn't. So eventually I went out to Boston and I took this trauma-sensitive yoga teacher training. And it was a huge transformation for me in my teaching at that point. Because what I realized was not necessarily that I needed to be addressing the needs of, say, a student who was struggling with a diagnosis of schizophrenia and a crystal meth addiction, you know, but actually what needed to be happening was that I needed to be creating practices that addressed the underlying trauma that was at the root of some of the struggles of that student. Not all of the struggles, but some of them.
Right. That there is a primary trauma that actually results in those behaviors or those.
Could be, I think so. And then the multiple traumas that come as a result of that life, right? So that really shifted what I was doing professionally. And then I started training other teachers. I created some trauma-sensitive trainings and started training other teachers to do that work. And my career has, you know, sort of expanded from there. In terms of how it's changed my own practice, I suppose that I really just have a deeper understanding of the why and the how of it all. Not to say that there isn't a delightful curiosity and mystery, and of course, still more and more to learn. But I'm really able to frame my own practice in a way where it's, I can really recognize that, yeah, you know, what I'm doing right now is having this effect, and I can apply my practice to my different mind states now.
So I've often felt that certain practices can exacerbate imbalances in people, and so what you're saying is that you have the awareness and know-how that your practice brings you into balance and not exacerbating imbalances
Absolutely.
energetically.
Absolutely. And as you know, the longer one practices, the more one's awareness and sensitivity is increased, and one continues to fine-tune and, you know, be able to more skillfully address whatever is happening in the body and whatever is happening in the mind using different tools.
So, do you have a, you've been teaching and working in the Vancouver yoga community for many years now. Mm-hmm. Do you have a vision of what you'd like to see the direction of the yoga community move in or expand in? Or would you like to see trauma-sensitive yoga included in yoga teacher trainings?
Of course. Of course. And you know, it's a common refrain that I hear from people that go through my training, which is that all teachers should have this training.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the reality is that more and more psychotherapists, counselors, psychologists are recognizing the importance of body-based complementary therapies for their clients. So often they're referring people with really significant needs to yoga, but that's about as far as the reference goes. And so people will often end up in classes that aren't appropriate or they're unsafe for them. So the teacher is uninformed of what, you know, could arise, and the student is sort of uninformed because they don't know much about yoga. They don't know the difference between maybe a Bikram's class with so-and-so and a restorative class with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, if more teachers had an understanding of this work, I think it would make a huge difference for their students. And in terms of what I'm interested in seeing in the yoga community, I think that it's primarily a focus on inclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
in all ways. Like, in what ways can we make this practice more accessible?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that's a very good question and very good direction that the yoga community should move in, because it still is quite an exclusive practice. And I don't think it was ever meant to be. I think it was meant to be a universal practice for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And these are really valuable tools,
yeah.
That everybody can use and that are accessible to everyone. And you can use them your whole life. Right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, yeah, that idea of accessibility, inclusivity, demystification.
Mm-hmm.
So
what, you know, if there are some yoga teachers that are listening to this interview right now, are there some things that you might be able to share with them to help them become more aware of the kinds of things that the kinds of skills that they could develop and become more effective teachers?
Hmm. That's a good question. I think the first thing that I would say is to remember that we are all trauma survivors, and that trauma gets held in the body, and that release can happen in yoga classes, and that that's okay. It's natural and normal.
Mm-hmm.
And that you really don't need to fix anything, but you want to make your primary goal as a yoga teacher to create safe space,
mm-hmm.
to hold space for your students, so that if something does arise for them, that they can move through that without an experience of shame or being called out or being misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
So really just knowing, like, we're all on this journey together, and yoga is a powerful tool, and make your focus always about safety. You don't have to change anything.
And what would a release of a trauma look like?
Well, I mean, it can look like a lot of different things. I mean, you know, sometimes you're going to see people who get triggered.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a reminder of a traumatic event and they can respond, you know, they can have a response of anxiety, fear. They may even react in the way that they did when the trauma first occurred.
Mm-hmm.
People can have flashbacks. I see this primarily in shavasana or relaxation,
mm-hmm.
where they really are back in the trauma, so you can see them kind of moving and responding in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people are going to respond to a trigger by dissociating, So sort of checking out,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the middle of a practice. You'll see people who may have a low threshold startle response. So if you come up behind them and you touch them, or, you know, they get triggered in some other way or startled in some way, the reaction
mm-hmm.
to that can be very overblown.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's just coming back to creating safety for the students.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I mean, that happens in a lot of the ways that we had spoken about earlier when you were talking about elements of a trauma-sensitive class. And, you know, safety also is initiated in the teacher's intention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, if your intention for the class
mm-hmm.
is to make sure that people are really working up a sweat and pushing their edges and really confronting themselves,
mm-hmm.
you're going to create a particular kind of atmosphere in the room, right?
Mm-hmm.
If your intention in the class is to hold space so that it's safe for every student to experience whatever arises,
mm-hmm.
you know, to leave if they need to leave, to come out of a pose and rest if they need to come out, then you're going to create a certain vibe in the room.
Right. And I also suppose that it would be really helpful for teachers to go through the experience of releasing traumas held inside our bodies, just so that we have a direct experience and understanding of what it feels like and what it's like.
I think most teachers do.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't know what it is when it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that a lot of yoga teachers use yoga to self-regulate, but they don't know that that's exactly what's going on. I also think a lot of yoga teachers use a lot of other things to self-regulate and probably don't know that
right.
that's what's going on, you know, much like my experience was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's why these teachers' trainings are one of the reasons why these teachers' trainings are so valuable for the students that attend them, is they start to re-envision themselves and start to understand their practices in different ways and start to get the impact of their practice in different ways. And I think they also start to see the people in their lives in different ways and certainly start to view addiction differently. That's a big one in my trainings for sure.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think it's very true what you said, that we're all trauma survivors. And I think we all have addictions to things, some of which are acceptable in our society and encouraged in our culture, and some of which are harmful. But certainly, you know, there are addictions in our culture that are acceptable in terms of, like, I don't know, shopping or,
mm-hmm.
you know, things like that that we can relate to if we have a framework of understanding.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I mean, that's what this is, you know, trauma-sensitive yoga teaching. It is a particular framework. It's a particular lens through which to see the practice of yoga and its benefits. And I think it's also a particular lens that you can view teaching through and people through.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Well, it's been a real pleasure to speak with you about this subject, and I hope that the vision of a more inclusive yoga community does come to be, and that we can be a part of contributing to that. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Farah. It's been a real pleasure.